you know, it's a little bit of a shock to the system when you start that fast. You're on the kind of headlines and a lot of pressure. And yeah, I just kind of lost a little bit. And then my dad passed away in 15, and I took a break from golf while he was sick to spend time with him. And yeah, it just never really came back after that. You know, mentally, I just wasn't the same person. And, you know, obviously losing my dad, who was such a big influence on my golf career and my life in general, was really hard. So yeah, it's been a journey, you know, it's full of ups and downs, just like any sport or any career. And, you know, thankfully I'm on the up again.
Yeah. Talk to us about your dad, because as you say, such a huge influence, and he took a huge step as well when he realized your potential. You all moved to America at a very young age. When did the love of golf start, and how important was he in that?
Huge. I mean, that was the reason. Basically, he was a golfer. My mom was a equestrian horse rider. And for a while when I was younger, I was doing both. And then I fell off the horse, and that was that. Yeah.
Right, no going back.
Yeah, no going back. So, yeah, basically, he would take lessons on, you know, at weekends, and I would go with him as kind of babysitting. And
and was your dad a mid-handicapper, a sort of weekend warrior out in the Saturday and Sunday, or was he someone who took the game quite seriously?
No, a weekend warrior, yeah. He was, you know, mid-teens, and he had some great days, but he always said, oh, the time she was 11, she was already kicking my butt. So, yeah, I think that was kind of a lot of pride for him too. Yeah.
And what age then did you realize that you were a little bit better than everybody else?
I think I was around 11, and I played in the Irish Girls Close, and I finished runner up, and that was kind of my first year in that scene, and that came of a bit of a shock. But then I kind of realized, okay, I'm pretty good at this. I want to do better and get more out of it. And then when I was 14, obviously we made the decision to move to the States to go to a golf academy. And, you know, very, very lucky that my parents had the opportunity to be able to do that with me.
So the whole family up and left.
Yep. Yeah. When I look back on it now, I'm like, wow, that was amazing. Like, what a, you know, kind of leap of faith. But my parents, you know, they supported me in any way they could. And that's what they thought was best. And
like,
I wanted to do it.
That's even slightly different to, say, a lot of the male golfers who we know who went to college in America, who go at 18, 19. Mm-hmm. Like leaving at 14, so you're heading over there to high school.
Yes, I did 4 years of high school, and basically, you know, did school from 7:30 to 12:30, and then the rest of the day was golf. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it sounds pretty exciting.
Yeah,
heading to college then, like we know that so many sports people from here rave about the college experience in America if you're a sports person. And we were just talking about Title IX, and for somebody in what's somewhat seen as a minority sport in terms of numbers in America, for a female golfer, there are huge benefits.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, female golf gets 7 full scholarships a year. So basically, you know, if you're really good at, I mean, you could go to a great school if you're really good, or even if you're just kind of like average and you don't want to turn pro, you can still go to a really good school and get a full ride. You know, you get tuition paid for, books paid for, you get, you know, rent expenses, and you know, it's a pretty cool opportunity to do something you love and get your education at the same time.
Where did you go?
I went to the University of Alabama. So it's a big school, massive football school, American football school. So there's a lot of money. That's what brings in the money for athletic departments, is American football. And so we had every opportunity you could ever imagine to succeed there.
Okay, so that's where it evens itself out. If they're how many players would they have in their football role?
Oh, 100 plus, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they have to have 100 plus female athletes.
Correct.
On a similar scholarship.
Exactly, yeah. So Title IX is an amazing opportunity for female athletes. You know, it gives us huge chances to make it.
It also means that the level of competition then, because people aren't turning professional, by and large, when they're 17 or 18, they're happy to go through the entire college process.
Yes.
And I think we probably see that at the moment with Leona Maguire, and people are wondering, as the world's best amateur, why she isn't turning professional sooner. Actually, it's a very good competitive life in college, aside even from the educational side of things.
Yeah, there's so many great schools, and we travel all over the country and compete against the best. I mean, all you do is learn at that level, and I think it's very important. You know, you learn how to be an adult, and you learn, you know, how are you going to handle being a pro, and those things are vital. You know, those are a big part of our professional careers, and I got so much experience from being at college, and And the other thing is, you get an education, you know, you get a degree if you finish. And
what were you studying?
Yeah, I did accounting. So pretty
the
hard.
Patrick Harrington route.
Yeah, the Patrick Harrington route. Yeah. I kind of, you know, last year was pretty tough, you know, senior classes and trying to combine that with golf as well. But, you know, what you can't have anything better than a backup plan like that. And it takes a lot of pressure off, you know, the golf side of things too, you know, because you just don't know. I've had my injuries, you know, what happens if that could have been career ending, and then what? So I just think it's an all around great experience for young girls and guys to do.
Yourself and Leona have been the real trailblazers for female golfers in this country. And both of you have gone a similar route, having to go to America. Do you think, is it possible for a young Irish golfer to stay in this country?
Yeah.
And progress? Like, yeah. Are we still that far behind in terms of investment?
No, I think it's a lot closer now than it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago, for sure. Coaching's gotten a lot better. The facility's gotten better. You know, Team Ireland Golf are extremely supportive. That's been supporting me since I turned pro, which is, you know, we're extremely lucky to have that. Now, you know, Americans don't get that. They don't have any sort of funding.
So you're on the carding
like
system,
that.
Are you? Mm-hmm. In terms you get?
Yeah.
You get
a certain amount every year, depending on what
you can achieve.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, it's a huge help because, you know, sponsors are not easy to come by in women's golf, and thankfully I have a few very supportive ones, which is amazing. You know, Team Ireland and Vestek, you know, it's just great to have them behind me.
The LPGA Tour just seems to be going from success to success at the moment, and the prize funds are rising all the time, and it's getting more and more coverage.
Yeah,
it's pretty much in contrast to what's happening, unfortunately, on the Ladies European Tour. And I think a lot of people remember back to the time at the Solheim Cup, and we had a Ladies Irish Open, and they were getting huge crowds down to Killeen Castle. It built up to something, and then it just very much died a death, that there was no one really to carry on.
Like, yeah.
Is your long-term future in America? Are you looking at European Tour golf and sort of shaking your head, wondering what the hell's going on?
Yeah, it's a tough situation for them. You know, they're losing a lot of tournaments, and their prize money, unlike ours, is just going downhill. But, you know, if you want to be on the main stage, you got to be in the LPGA. And yeah, most of our events are in the States, but there's a lot in Asia now, and there's a few kind of over here. You know, we have the Scottish Open, which is now an LPGA event. And, you know, hopefully at some point we can get the Irish Open back, because, you know, people in Ireland love golf, and I think they should be able to see us women compete as well as the men. And I think they would enjoy that.
So you were talking there about Annika Sörenstam and the incredible success she enjoyed. When you finished third in the US Open, do you suddenly your ambitions, your goals start changing? Like, if that's your first professional event, like, I don't know, what were your thoughts when you were teeing it up at the US Open that week, and so what the next couple of years looked like, and how did they change afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even think I'd thought that much. I mean, I'd always wanted to be, you know, well up there in the rankings before I turned pro, and I was just so excited when I got to the US Open that I was finally pro. You know, college was amazing experience, but I was also ready. You know, I was like, okay, I'm ready to do this now.
Bank account is open.
Yeah, exactly. But when you finish third, you know, it's like, okay, I can compete every week and I can do this, and I almost want a major, and what else can I do? And your expectations go pretty high pretty fast, and everybody else's expectations of you go really high as well. And, you know, it's kind of a hard thing to swallow too. I mean, you know, you learn a lot from that. You learn how to manage your expectations, and how to not get distracted from, you know, you got to stick to your process and not get so wrapped up in the results of everything. And, you know, I've learned a lot in these past 3 years. It's not exactly how I pictured it, because it's been mostly this way after that, but now I'm on the up again, and hopefully I can draw on those experiences when and if that happens again.
It must have been a brilliant thing as well for your parents and for your dad to have had that before he passed, to get to see you and to realize everything, and all the risks that they took and all the sacrifices that were made, that actually,
think about that a lot, actually. You know, because that was very early, obviously, in my professional career. My dad wasn't around for that long of my career, and professionally. And for him to see that and be so proud and kind of see that, you know, they put a lot of hard work into this too. So it's very special for him to have that memory, and I'm so glad that it happened when he was still here.
How difficult is it then when your dad is ill and you're going through that, and as a professional sports person, like, people on the outside, they don't know, and they don't generally care because they don't know. Everyone's just looking at your results, and you're judged. Your identity is forged so much in your results on the golf course, and people don't really stop to ask, what's happening.
Anything else, yeah.
Is that something you really noticed?
Yeah. Well, yes and no. You know, I had a lot of support from my friends on tour for the players. I cannot tell you how many cards I got in my lockers the weeks after. But, you know, that was a really tough thing. You know, when my dad got diagnosed, he had pancreatic stage 4 cancer, stage 4B when it was diagnosed. So it's a brutal cancer. And, you know, I said to him, I was like, I'm not playing. I'm done. Yeah. You know, I only know, you know, average lifetime after that is 3 to 6 months. And I was like, I'm not going to spend the last 6 months traveling around and not being there. So, but I did play one event because I had gotten an exemption into a major, Craft Nabisco. And so that was the last event that my dad saw me play in. And you know, it was pretty cool. I finished tied for 20th there. And when I think back on it, like I hadn't practiced. I hadn't put much work in going into that tournament. I still felt really rusty and I played really well. But I guess, you know, I just knew that this is my last chance to kind of for dad to see me. And it was really amazing that, you know, I was actually covered on Golf Channel and they actually talked about my dad in on the Golf Morning Drive and on the Golf Channel. So, you know, it's cool for him to be, you know, sitting there watching that. You know, it's hard to think about, but, you know, it's really amazing that he saw that.
Yeah. How long then until you could face going back on tour again? Because it is such a solitary existence. You have to leave the house and say, I'll be back in a month. I'll be back in 6 weeks' time. Yeah. You're probably staying in a cheap hotel somewhere trying to save a few quid.
Exactly.
It's not all glamour.
No, it's not. Definitely not like the man, the top man. Yeah, I actually decided to go out the week after we had the funeral in the States, and bad decision, very bad decision. You know, I guess I just wanted to go back out there and play for him. Yeah. That was kind of my mindset at that point.
It's hard not to make bad decisions.
Yeah, and you know, so it was actually I think it was in Canada, and I remember I had the same caddy for probably almost a year, and he could tell, you know, I was kind of getting it rough, and I looked across the fairway. I remember I was on the sixth hole and I was like one over par, and I looked across the fairway because I wasn't feeling that great about game, expecting my dad to be there, and that was it. Like, I just lost it.
In the middle of the round.
Yeah, in the middle of the round. Like, and thank God that I was playing with friends of mine and they knew exactly what was going on, but I was just bawling in the middle of the round. And I finished out because that's kind of the person I am. And I got through it, and you know, they actually played good, so thank goodness. I didn't want to be a distraction, but yeah, I quit after that. You know, I finished the round, and then I decided I need to go home. Like, I need to just digest and, you know, kind of look back and start to grieve.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I did that, and then, but I kept battling, played, but I just wasn't there. Like, mentally, I was physically there, but mentally just not the same person. And that took a long time.
Golf must be one of the most difficult sports as well, then, when you're getting back on track to get that balance right, because you say it's such a mental game and you're so close to your dad and he's so intertwined in everything that's happened in your career that you want to go out and do it for him.
Yeah.
But actually having that emotion,
it's hard.
Isn't really the best thing to have with you when you're when you're teeing it up in a golf course.
Yeah. It's just a constant reminder. Mm. And that was the hardest part for me, was golf was the biggest reminder of my dad and I couldn't focus. But, you know, I started to look at it and say, okay, well, this is great that I had that connection with my dad on the golf course and I can feel close to him when I'm out there and use that in a positive way as instead of, you know, being absolutely completely torn up about it. You know, it never, the pain, it's always there, it's always hard, but it does get a little easier.
So obviously confidence is very high now coming in after a win in the last couple of weeks. The second tier, can you sustain a living out of that, or is it something you put yourself through for a year, hope that it all flicks around, and then you get yourself back in the LPGA Tour, and that's where life becomes comfortable again? Is it a proper old grind out on the second tier?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a grind. You know, I think the biggest battle is just trying to keep the expenses down as much as I can. You know, if you play good on the Symetra, like top three, you can probably make close to $100,000, which is really good.
Okay.
So the prize money has gone up dramatically. But you know, I decided not to kind of take a full-time caddy this year. You don't have to have a caddy on Symetra. It's just something that I think I can buckle down and do by myself for a year. And I'll have a few people come in and out occasionally for me, you know, for five or six events. So I'll have to do about 10 on my own, but you know, it's just part of it. You know, I believe I'll be fine by myself.
Yeah. What are the aspirations then for the next 2-3 years?
Yeah, back on LPGA and hopefully get where I think I belong, which is, you know, at least top 50, top 20, you know.
Where do you think you belong?
Definitely, you know, I'd love to be top 20, but I've always wanted to be the number one player in the world, and obviously that's taken a little bit of a turn here and there, but, you know, that's still always my aspiration, and that's what I work for. That's what gets me up in the morning, so, you know, I'll never forget that.
Coming through at Alabama, you would have played against and played alongside a lot of those golfers who are in the top 50 in the world right now. Do you look at them and see, well, why their career has gone this way and why yours has just stuttered over the last couple of years?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to watch. But, you know, that's just how golf is. It's a tough sport, and you got to have a well-rounded balance of everything to make it, you know, you got to have that to succeed. And, you know, I watch them, and I guess that gives me confidence, too, because I know, you know, in college I beat them, so there's no reason why I can't beat them now.